But that doesn't mean they didn't leave any records, or at least some indication of what they were like. It's the fourth dimension that will help make some kind of communication link between our world today and these past civilizations. Tomorrow morning we're going to get into what the fourth dimension is, and how knowledge of it will help you in your studies. Is the fourth dimension something related to astral projection and the world beyond? Not exactly the world beyond, more of a scientific and advanced study of Anunnas and Anunnites as a spiritual force that can actually take you to many parts of the universe and even connect you with people and events that have occurred, and with those yet to occur. Edgar Cayce is a prime example of someone in your world who mastered these spiritual forces. You mean the Anunnas and Anunnites theory? God being those positive and negative signs that combined make the units of energy organizing the intimacy of the atom? Those units of energy that are the manifestation of the vibratory center of the universe, God, if you prefer, that is the same essence of our spirits. I'm proud of you, Chaco. I remember these things. It made so much sense to me, I can't turn my back on such enlightenment. I've also read that Edgar Cayce made a prediction that the last existing records of Atlantis were going to be found in a secret subterranean chamber, between the paws of the Sphinx in Egypt. How would you like to take a nice astral projection trip to that secret chamber in the Sphinx? That would be far out. How is it that when you astral travel to places you've never seen that you can still see and sense things? You're talking about the time you saw that March 15th Time magazine in a self-trance, when you could not only see, but also feel the moisture. It's because you were able to enter the fourth dimension and were able to enter another physical form. You're also able to reproduce your physical form at a distance while your body sleeps comfortably somewhere else. That physical form isn't matter, is it? No, it's merely a reflection of your body, Anunnites and Anunnas that can be seen, but not touched. There are no atoms there. A spirit is able to move freely in space and go through thick concrete walls. Spiritism and mediumism are also part of the fourth dimension. When we start taking trips into some secret chambers where no man on this planet has been able to go with his physical body, it'll be of great benefit to you, because you'll see some of the ancient texts and have the rare opportunity to view some of the most valuable teachings on your planet. Are you going to help me do this? We'll project there together. Why do you do all these nice things for me? I've been such a pain to you. Well, that shows you we always practice what we teach. Now let's go to bed. Tomorrow will be a busy and informative day. I lay awake for a while, watching Rama sleep, review soft-hyphening some of the things she'd told me. I thought about the fourth dimension and her saying that as soon as I understood it, most of the material not available to me now would be mine to analyze through astral projection. It was going to be difficult to share this information with anybody, though, because it would sound so fictional. I still found it difficult to believe myself. Until now, I'd been relatively silent about my enjoyable astral trips, almost certain no one would ever believe me. Then I remembered the people in whose company I'd be sharing this ridicule: George Adamski, Lobsang Rampa, Edgar Cayce, and Madame Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. Then I didn't feel so bad. Chapter 14. The Fourth Dimension. Rama and I were up early the next morning. It was a weekday, and there were few people around. The sun wasn't out, in fact, it looked like it might rain. We had our breakfast and decided to take a ride to a nearby town, Jawa. On our way, we saw the site of ancient Inca caves. Rama said many groups had gone into the caves to study them, and some had never come out again. One person from a missing group who did return came out of the caves with his clothes torn, unable to speak, and completely insane. He was carrying two pieces of corn made out of pure 24 karat gold. These caves are said to connect with a network of roads running underneath the whole Inca Empire, Rama explained. I remained silent as she told me this story, because I remembered that on one of my previous visits to Peru, while in the city of Cuzco, I'd been told that two young men had gone into a church in downtown Cuzco, where they found a secret entrance to a cave. They went into the caves and disappeared. When one of them finally emerged, He was foaming at the mouth and was clutch soft hyphening some pieces of pure gold, babbling about finding a whole underground city beneath the Andes Mountains. At that time, everyone dismissed the story and forgot about it. "Would you like to take a look?" Rama asked. "Well, maybe from the outside," I said. As we approached the cave entrance, Rama told me about a book coming out, The Gold of the Gods, by Eric von Daniken, that would explain how the Incas were related to the stars and life on other planets. She suggested I read it. 279 By this time, the sun had come out and was shining brightly. That put us in the mood for a picnic and we started looking for a pleasant spot. We chose a place on top of a hill overlooking the whole panorama of Mantaro Valley. As we settled down we began our session. She discussed the similarities between the Incas and Lamas in Tibet. Both cultures taught the concept of the third eye and man's connection to the stars. She reminded me that many years ago Lobsang Rampa wrote about the third eye and how it connects the physical body and the spirit. "Love God and your fellow human beings," is the basic theme of all the esoteric teachings of man throughout history, she said. "Anybody with a certain amount of culture should have at least an elementary awareness of the schools we've been discussing. You mean the Rosicrucians, the magicians of Zarathustra, Madame Blavatsky and her Theosophical Society, the Essens, the Tibetan Lamas, the Order of Aquarius, metaphysics, and all the so-called Hermetic initiates?" "Yes, but names aren't important. Since the beginning of written history, these esoteric centers have taught the same things, many under very tight secrecy and severe discipline, and only to a chosen few." "Why the secrecy?" "They had to carefully screen those with whom they shared these teachings, because the knowledge of such truths meant the development of new powers and faculties that could cause tragedies and wars in the hands of the wrong people." "You mean learning these things could be that power soft-fool, that people who didn't have pure intentions could cause disasters?" "Correct. Imagine the absolute control of matter, and its intimate relationship with energy going far beyond the atom, in the hands of people deciding the destinies of the world. The kind of people who enjoy seeing other people suffer and die. In the fourth dimension, we're dealing with cosmic energy, which could wipe out an entire planet faster than any of your atomic bombs. That's why these teachers chose only those few who would use their understanding of these forces for benign purposes, such as spiritual development and the knowledge of God. There's no way that a teacher of this cosmic force would call Richard Nixon and ask him to come and master the secrets of the fourth dimension. You came to me out of the clear blue sky, and invite me to be a part of this knowledge. You must have a lot of trust in me. A while ago, I mentioned the gold underneath the Peruvian Inca caves. You went into complete silence and started recalling different things. Whenever I have mentioned this to other people, the first thing that came to their minds was how to find a way down there so they could find the gold. I'm sharing these moments with you because I sense you're not greedy. I think by the time we've finished, you're going to be cultivating your spirit, not searching for a gold mine somewhere. That's why I'm taking the time to talk to you and turn you on to new things. How do you know I won't betray you? I was born with extrasensory perception, what you call the sixth sense. On my planet everyone is born with this third eye, it's part of our physiological bodies. Why don't we have it here on Earth? You do, but it's not cultivated. The ancient Peruvians perforated an opening on their skulls in order to have contact with the psychic world. The same operation Lobsang Rampa had on his forehead. After you mentioned this to me earlier, I went to a museum in Lima. I saw the trepanations on the skulls, filled with gold and silver plaques. The museum at Soft-Dank told me it was some kind of brain surgery per soft-formed by Inca surgeons. After that, I read a book by Raymond Drake, which compares the Tibetan Lamas and the teachings about the third eye. The whole thing is clicking into place. I'm glad we can use these few days to straighten out all that, because this is actually the beginning of your learning process. Rama, I want to ask you a question, and I would like a straight answer. You know me well enough by now to know I won't lie to you. I'm already sensing your question. Go ahead. I can accept the idea of religion, only if it doesn't interfere with my promiscuous activities. How does Jesus feel about people who copulate for the pure pleasure of it? Can they catch the 144,000 boat? It's in the commandments, thou shalt not do it. Look, if we go into the very primitive teachings on earth, the Bible, say nothing about the sex act itself being bad. As I told you before, it's the work of Satan to restrict sexual activity, to make it seem dirty, or sinful, a tool, an item of trade, to be used for political bribery, blackmail, and swindling. Then it's no longer pure or pleasurable. I think you're asking me if Jesus would consider you evil because of your active libido. By earth standards, people may judge you for that. But, cosmically speaking, that's nothing to be ashamed of, providing, of course, it doesn't harm your fellow human beings or go against nature while you enjoy the pleasures of the flesh. As far as you or sex being evil, you're right when you say you're a product of the society in which you live. If two consenting people want to enjoy the physical pleasure of life because they know it'll feel good, they're being spiritual and loving towards one another. They're being good Christians. When two people vibrate at a certain even frequency, they're mutually blessed. The more they enjoy it, climax together, one beautiful mass of energy will generate from their bodies. An energy that is peaceful and, you better believe, beautiful. The God that lives inside you enjoys the gift of life. There are even some parts of the world where the sexual act is a form of prayer. It is called Tantric Yoga. Does that answer your question? Well, I have another one. Did Jesus ever, I mean, to the best of your knowledge, have such desires? He was a man like any other man. Having a beautiful sexual experience with someone is not sinful. But if you've connived to get someone, say someone young and inexperienced, into bed by telling her you'll make her into a movie star, that's not good. Now you know better. Get your satisfaction in peace. Tell me some more about the fourth dimension, I said, changing the subject. There's no such thing as a scientific explanation for miracles and supernatural planes, other than what you and I know as the third force. One thing can't be denied, miracles and supernatural powers, created by forces that go beyond your understanding, have existed and have happened. Events like the opening of the Red Sea for the Jews to escape the armies of Ramses II, and Jesus turning water into wine. If these kinds of events happen and continue to happen without any explanation from modern science, we have to at least allow for the presence of an unusual force generating these events. In your world today, man is about to enter the door that will take him into the secrets of what we're calling the fourth dimension. Even though we don't need to use verbal language when we communicate, it's still difficult to explain the fourth dimension in a world where language and meanings are structured for only three dimensions. We're talking about a plane that is completely different in its physical constitution from anything you've known up to this time. This is the spiritual plane. It's where your spirit goes when you die. Here is where you meet God as an energetic force. It's almost like being high on drugs. Is astral projection the same as being dead? In a way, yes. It's a similar phenomena, but your physical body is still alive. There's a link between your soul and body, your silver cord. With astral projection, you may discover new worlds and new experiences. But the plane we're referring to as the fourth dimension is something like a bridge between the physical five sense world and entities post of different kinds of matter and energy. I see. You're saying there are certain types of humanity existing in this dimension that have other senses and features different than we or you may have. Exactly. The universe is so big that even we don't know what's out there. That's why you're having difficulty explaining the fourth dimension. In your world, lots of people have experienced some kind of unexplainable event at one time or another. An event that involved a miracle or supernatural happened soft-hyphening. These are manifestations of the fourth dimension, which can be perceived only by your spirit. The soft-frequencies of energy present on his plane, and in the third force, which organizes the atom, anionas and anionites, can't be seen with the naked eye. Modern science has named this phenomena quarks. There are people here on Earth who can perceive, they must have a sixth sense, a third eye. Right. They're able to see through walls, stone, even the interior of the human organism. In the fourth dimension, you can clearly see and sense all of the matter and energy that surrounds you. On this plane there are many forms of intelligence, not only human, but also in the form of spirits. These are your spiritual guides in the universe. Or you could call them angels, patron saints. They're at a superior level because they've abandoned a human body or any link with material life. When you astral travel now, you only take part of your consciousness to that plane of the fourth dimension, because you're afraid, or because there's something stronger holding you in this world. Remember when you told me that your spirit rushed back to your body when you saw the magazine with a picture of the Pope? That was a good example of it. Your reaction distorted the microfrequency, causing your body to take that little jump. Today, we're going to try something new and even more exciting. I think your vibrations can get in tune with the fourth dimension. If you're not clear on the terminology, don't worry about it. This is something you have to experience rather than be lectured about. You said the fourth dimension is a plane of vibratory comma waves. Yes, the ones that ruled the development of clairsoft-voyance, and opened the doors of the cosmic plane. What we're going to do now is separate our spirits from this world and these bodies, and become part of the whole mass of cosmos that fills everything in the universe. Rama got up, walked to the edge of the hill and picked up a few stones and rocks that were lying around. She examined each one, throwing some aside, carrying others in her hands. She came over to where I sat and put the rocks down between us. These rocks are known as Galena stones. They absorb the sound of radio waves. Here, in this part of the world, we can catch any radio station in the world. Before we start, though, I want you to relax and concentrate. Your body is going to be like an antenna to these radio frequencies in the air now. Hold this stone in your hand, and take this other one and put it next to your head. What's your favorite radio station? I have several in many places in the world. KFAXsoft-FM in Los Angeles, WOBKM in New York, Radio Luxembourg, Panamericana in Lima, KRLA in Pazsoft-Denner. Never mind. What I wanted to know was something else. Here, shift your head towards the north a little, okay? Now, don't move, just concentrate on this. She placed my keys on top of a rock, and told me to follow the reflection of the light, just as if I were beginning my astral projection exercises. This time, however, I was to keep my eyes open and relaxed to the point of feeling the vibration of the stones. My body was to be the radio receiver of some radio station in the world. I argued that this would be a physical impossibility because in Lima alone there are so many stations it was hard to get a clear reception. She told me to shut up and if I found a familiar tune, voice or melody, to follow it, just as I had followed the ray of light when I was astral traveling. I must have been there for more than an hour, trying to relax and feel something. Rama just sat there looking through my books. Seeing that nothing was happening, she came over to me and started massaging the back of my neck and the sides of my head. When I had astral traveled, I knew what to look for, but this was a new experience. Now I was supposed to be sensing the electromagnetic waves of radio broadcast soft-ing. I lay there a while longer, still concentrating on the light reflections produced by my keys on the rock. Then I heard something much like voices in the distance. I had a familiar sensation as my soul left my body. It was then I recognized the music, Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture, Full and Rich. I couldn't feel my body nor see anything, but my whole being seemed to merge with the music and become part of that vibratory wavelength that surrounded me. The clear pitch of the instruments and the sounds of the percussion were like a vehicle of ecstasy for my soul. When the music finished, I heard the voice of a disc jockey, speaking in some Germanic language. I still had no sensation of my body or my eyes, everything was pure, all-encompassing sound. The melodic theme began to shift, flowing into a completely different kind of music, like something you might hear in a supermarket. I began to feel as if my whole soul was stretching into infinity as it followed the impulse of the sounds. Then I was flying in space, moving at a great speed one moment, then slowing down or ascending and descending. I had no conception of time, but at some point during this process, I became aware of space and distance. I was very far away from the Earth. A big sphere was in front of me. My perception of it was that of a huge person looking at the terrestrial globe suspended in the universe. All was movement and sound. The sound waves were on an even frequency, something I'd never heard before. It reminded me of a telephone dial tone, but its evenness came out of a conglomeration of millions and millions of combined, yet independent, sounds or units of sound. The movement was also even. I could see the clouds surrounding the planet and the European continent coming into view. The sun shining upon the Mediter soft-radiancy made Italy's boot-like shape kicking down on the island of Sicily look different from any conception I'd ever gotten from looking at a map. The blue part of the planet, what we know as the sky, was not blue, but greenish-yellow. I could see the moon, but my vision scope was not that of having two physiological eyes, more as though sight were some soft-thing all around me. At times my perception would be pulled by a powerful amount of light, as if I were looking at the sun with my naked eye, right in the middle of the day. This light was so bright that I tried to avoid it. But I had no hands to cover my eyes with, nor any eyelids to close. As soon as the light hit me, I felt myself being pulled by its magnetic forces. I was one unit of energy in the great mass of energy producing that light. I was part of it. Merging into the light energy was like passing through a solid wall. Upon entering it, I felt everything downshift, slowing as new density emerged, heavier than the other. As I hit this atmosphere, the music all around me became more vivid and dramatic. It was a commercial, in Spanish, extolling the virtues of one of the best-known colas on this planet. The station identification told me I was tuned into some major Caribbean television station. My awareness also shifted in the changed density. I began to see specific areas on the planet. I saw vegetation on the ground, then some high mountains. I realized I was over the Peruvian jungle, just about to come in contact with the Andes Mountains. I slowed down even more, almost to the point of being suspended in the air. I looked west, beyond the Mount Soft-Tains, and saw the circle of sun almost at eye level, meaning that sunset was not too far away. I wanted to get back into my body, but didn't have the command to do it. I was about to freak out, when I heard Rama's voice inside my head, saying, "Keep going straight. Slowly. Follow the sunset just as you follow it when you go into that self-trance that precedes astral projection." It was a great relief knowing Rama was with me. If I needed help getting back into my body, she was there. I heard her voice again, saying, "I want you to be aware that your eyes in your physical body are open, and when you get back to it, you'll be staring at the sun. Start moving your body little by little." I don't know how long I'd been back in my body when I became aware of Rama removing the Galena stones from my fingers. It was 4:10 in the afternoon. We had started at about 10 or 11 that morning. I was exhausted and hungry, but eager to know what had happened to me that day. "Wow, Rama, that was some experience. You got a little touch of the fourth dimension, Chaco." The music was incredible. Like the universe's version of quadraphonic sound. Your whole being was in tune with the electro-soft-magnetic waves of the radio and television broadcast soft-ings. I went around the Earth several times. You were tuned into the weather satellites, with the magnetic waves out in space. Your consciousness was perceiving the same thing as the television cameras inside those satellites. It was the same principle in operation as when you saw the magazine at the office. I felt like I was out there. You were out there. While I stayed here with your physical body the whole day, watching over you. Wasn't that good of me? Thanks, Rama. You keep handing me the most beautiful experiences of my life. This is only the beginning. Just a little taste. It's every bit as easy as astral traveling, and far better when you do it with your eyes open as you did today. Why is it better? Because your scope of perception expands through the added dimension of sight and can catch more of the cosmic forces. You're more aware of light, which means your spirit has more attractional forces working on it. That enables it to travel freely in the cosmos. I don't understand it, but it was a fabulous experisoft-ents. That must be what is meant by a natural high. Tomorrow, I'll have another little gift for you. And this one you're going to like even more because you will get in touch with other intelligences through the comsoft-mon ground of the fourth dimension. I don't know if I'm ready for that kind of experience. Don't forget, I'm still at an experimental point. Oh, come on, Chaco, you're such a spoiled baby. Of course you're ready. Perhaps not tomorrow or the day after, but with the proper drilling and practice, you'll be able to travel to lots of places within the universe. Rama, I'm getting hungry and there's a phone call I have to make to my people in Lima. I want to find out what they've decided as far as my returning to the United States. Would you mind very much driving to Huancayo with me so I can place the call? Not at all, let's go. We arrived in Huancayo a little past 6, and had supper at the Ristorante Olimpico. Afterwards we drove to the phone company to call Lima. I thought it was somewhat ironic. Having found the secret of astral projection and tuning into the electromagnetic waves of radio and television broadcasting, that I still had to use a telephone to get information about my flight from a computer's memory banks, when in theory, I could obtain it by tuning into the computer. By 7:30 that evening I had been informed that I was booked on Air Panama flight number 102, leaving Lima at 7 o'clock Sunday morning, September 29th. Arriving in Miami, Florida, at 4:30 that same afternoon. The end of the message said, "Be certain you are on that flight since your people in Miami are leaving town on Monday." I was a little sad to receive this news, because I knew it was goodbye time with Rama. I had grown to love this space lady as I never believed I could. She was waiting in the car for me when I returned. As soon as I got into the car, she said, "I think it's best you return to the United States on Sunday. I guess that means you already know I must be in Miami on Sunday at the latest. I have a meeting with my Peruvian partners. Chaco, on October 3rd some event will happen here. I don't think it's going to be too pleasant. Uh-oh, I know what is going to happen again. I read in the paper the other day that President Juan Velasco Alvarado is going to have the people come out into the streets. October 3rd is the anniversary date of his revolution, and of his taking office as the president of the military junta of Peru. I bet there will be disturbances, like newspapers being burned and people fighting in the streets. You're right, I think I better split the scene before somebody changes his mind and calls to tell me to stay and cover this one." Rama said she would be going to the southern part of Peru with some of her brothers. "We'll be conducting some mining and geological studies." We were both silent on the drive back to Acaya. I didn't know what to say to her. One thing still bothered me. I had never been able to see Rama's flying saucers at close range, and this might be my last opportunity. At the present time, I had no incentive to return to the United States. During my absence, sometime around the middle of July, the friend I had been living with in Beverly Hills had married someone else. Rama, sensing my feelings as usual, said, "What's the matter, big international playboy? You look so forlorn." "I don't know," I said, "it's just that I've gotten used to these sessions with you, and now that we've finished everything in the outline, I guess it's time to say goodbye. That always puts me in this type of mood. I'm sorry if I'm rotten company, Rama, but I wish I didn't have to go back so soon. Would you like to return soon?" "That would be super, but I don't think I'll be able to. I don't mean to be negative, but life is very disappointing at times. I came to Peru this time to play my last card, this was going to be it. Had I succeeded, I could have been their hero. But as you've seen, every effort I've made to deal with the Peruvian government has turned to disaster. Since I've been astral traveling, I've become convinced that one organization is behind this whole number. They're big and powerful and I really can't do anything to influence the situation one way or another. Nor do I have the tools to fight them. I think it is this company that is causing most of the problems in the world, not only in Peru, but in many other nations as well. My mother's words are coming back to me. She often said that life on this planet is controlled at one large conference table. Since I've been taking my spirit out of my body, it has become clear to me that she was right.